The following is a 1250 WTMA special presentation.
This is John Quincy, welcoming you to another hour of the History of TMA, our ongoing look back at the legacy of Charleston's second oldest radio station, the station that served the Lowcountry for over seven decades, the station you're listening to right now. In our last hour of the History of TMA, we replayed part of a special edition of WTMA's Morning Buzz, originally broadcast on June 15th, 2009. Our actual 70th birthday. Richard Todd was off that day, so Live 5's Bill Sharp graciously sat behind the main microphone in our talk show studio, along with several past personalities from the days when WTMA had a top 40 format. Right.
Music Radio TMA, Love Will Find a Way. Masters and Johnson found more than one. But of course, it's a whole other subject. 657. I feel like busting loose. Say it. Come on, let me hear y'all say it. Say it, Rick.
No, I don't want to say it.
Okay, well, that does it for John.
I'll say what I will say, though.
Thank you for joining me. I appreciate your company today. Enjoy, Rick, who's next on TMA.
3 o'clock in the afternoon. It's Friday. You know that?
It's nice. It's Friday.
On WTMA, Charleston, South Carolina, with Rick Tracy.
1250, the best music, WTMA.
All right, folks, we're back. Bill Sharp, Live 5 News. I'm honored to be asked to help sit in here and be with a bunch of Lowcountry legends, WTMA legends like Bill Quinn, Booby Nash, Gary London, on the phone, Reverend John Burwell, and the ever-present Terry Allen, the Weekend Warrior, Kirk Varner, calling with us now. On the phone. Kirk, how are you?
Oh, man. Did I call into the radio retirement home?
Yeah. Nobody likes the smarty pants, Kirk. Where's my polygraph?
Thank you, Kirk. I love you, too.
What was the question?
Well, it's a little scary, you know, to call into this group of people, and when John puts you on the phone, you think to yourself, I don't know that I can be in the room with this many egos at one time.
Kirk, your ego's bigger now.
Right? That's right, and it's tough, but, you know, somebody has to do it. Kirk, when were you here, and tell us about your experiences.
You know, Bill, I came to work at the Mighty TMA in 1972 while a 16-year-old student at North Charleston High School.
Right.
God bless him, John Trenton and J.J. Scott, the late J.J. Scott, hired me. And my first job there was to spin the religious programs on Sunday morning and to play American Top 40, which used to get shipped in every week on vinyl LPs. And did that for a while, and then somebody, I guess, failed to pay their bill one week, and they put me on the air for half an hour playing records. And after that, J.J. and then later Lee Richards gave me an air shift on Saturday and Sunday night. So I was sort of in between Terry Allen's first shift as the Weekend Warrior and then probably his return in the early 70s. And it was, you know, the fundamental experience of my broadcasting career.
I think Gary London wants to say something too.
These young kids that we had working at well, we were all young at one time working at TMA, but Kurt and people like Mark Shipman would do anything and everything that you ask them to. They would bend over backwards. Kurt,
they were eager beavers. Yeah, whatever you needed them to do. Yeah.
No,
yeah,
I think at one point, truthfully, I would have paid for the privilege of working at the Mighty TMA. It really was a great learning experience.
Oh, you didn't pay? Because
no, it's true. They gave me a quarter an hour.
Well, the rest of us had to pay for it. Yeah. Yes, the great boob, the big boob, has something to say to you, Kirk.
No, I don't.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Terry Allen does.
The only thing I remember about Kirk is that he was so thin, if he turned sideways and stuck his tongue out, he'd look like a zipper. I used to always say, are you still that thin?
I'm okay. I put a few pounds on in the years since, but I'm still doing okay from that. I almost got fired over the big boob.
Why is that?
And this is a true story. We produced in the early 70s an album with photographs of all the jocks inside of it. Boob got me to take a picture of him reading a newspaper, sitting on the toilet in the men's room. Jeez. Now, he had his pants on and everything, and the lid was down, but people got upset about that photograph, and I remember getting called into the office and asked, who told you to take this picture?
Right.
And I could have ratted him out, but I did not give up the big group because
well,
he just didn't do that.
There we go.
And you know that, do you know, Kirk, that that picture is published? It's on the WTMA Memories. It ended up on the Toon Decks.
Yep.
For a week,
yeah.
And so is Kirk with those heart-shaped.
Kirk's got an apron on.
No, yeah, he's got heart-shaped drawers on.
Yeah, a heart-shaped boxer shorts that I got talked into putting on. And yeah, there are a number of pictures that I think we'd all like remove from the internet.
Maybe and that's one of them. I have no desire to see you in
it's
heart-shaped
be there
shorts
forever.
Terry Allen, you wanted to say something to Kirk, didn't you?
That was about a week ago, and I forgot. Kirk, they brought me back.
Yep.
Because they needed a someone to bring the ratings back up.
Yep.
For you. And look, Kirk, I want to say it was a pleasure working with you. And puberty is set for you when now?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm happy to say,
how old is 40 what?
This is getting.
After all these years, I'm happy to say that I am the only person on the radio station with a voice almost as high as Bill Walsh is doing the weather.
Kirk, what are you doing now?
I'm actually the news director of the ABC television station in New Haven, Connecticut.
Well, send money.
Exactly.
Kirk, great to talk to you, my friend. My best to your family, and hope all is well, and thanks so much for sharing your memories with
us. Thanks very much, gang.
Thanks. You got a real job.
Yeah, let's give him a big round of applause.
You remember the big fire at the Exxon plant up the road here?
Oh, sure I do.
I was just fresh at WTMA, and I got to tell you, I went and covered it. I wanted to know more about radio, so I took a chance to do a little stint in the news department. And I remember covering the story, and the big hook that the news director took out of it was that it was the biggest fire since the fire that they had several years ago when those tanks blew up when I was about, that was the 50s, early 60s. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I got a big boost out of it. In fact, the boss gave me a bit of a raise that day.
Is that so?
That's right, because I got out there and was, what do you call those runners doing that day when the guy was...
Stringers.
I act like a stringer for the station for a little bit there.
I got a great news story that happened before I got here. On Church Street, that church with the high steeple, I don't know all
this
the names
Phillips.
Of the churches. Yeah, it was on fire, and there was a guy by the name, I think his name was Jose. Mm-hmm. He was a Hispanic fella, and he wasn't on the radio, but he worked around the station.
Gotcha.
And so they said they didn't have only but one newsman at the time, mm-hmm. and he had to stay at the station, so they sent Jose down there. This is a true story now. I'm not making this up. Sent him down there to cover that fire. And because we were at the Dock Street Theater, it was only a block away, and so Jose is on the telephone talking to the newsman. They're giving live reports. And he says, oh, my. He said, the tower on the church is beginning to fall. And so, of course, with the radio station just down a block, the newsman said, which way is it falling? and Jose, now, Jose said this. This is true. Now, I'm not kidding you. Jose says, if his name was Jose, I can't remember what his real name was. He said, it's falling down.
Gary London, you had something you wanted to share with us.
Yeah, when we were still on Orange Grove Road, I was doing afternoons, and all of a sudden, here comes John Burwell running into the studio, grabbing the fire extinguisher.
Oh!
There was a trailer we had out there beside the generator.
With as if big... I was going to put that thing out.
Yeah, you were going to put the whole trailer out. Well... fire extinguisher.
Right.
That's Burwell. Go. You're stupid, you know.
John, do you remember that?
He's had a senior moment, that's all. What
you remember
stupid.
That, don't you? I have those all the time, Bill.
Let me tell you another news story.
Tell me, John.
Yeah, I was filling in one time. This is when I was off the air as production director. The morning news anchor was on vacation, and so they had me reading the news.
Who was the morning anchor at that point?
That was Al Cammy.
Yeah.
Back at that time. And all of a sudden, I get one of these bulletins in, and Elvis Presley is dead.
Oh, don't make me go
1977-ish, about 76, 77.
Right.
I sure
absolutely.
Do. I sure
off,
do.
I was off the air, and I came in, and I was just blown away by it, and I think I was going, it's the last time I did news.
That happened, and Steve Bell was doing afternoon drive
right.
news.
Right.
And he did not lead with that story.
Right.
Oh, my God.
The king died.
And John Trenton was a little on the mad side about that.
Well, he was going by what John told him to do.
But I got to tell
Lead
you all.
With a local story.
Right.
And I was about to kick his behind.
Oh, my gosh. John Burwell and Gary London, let me tell you a related story to that. I'm in the newsroom at Channel 5, WCSC.
Mm-hmm.
And we were watching the evening news, and I was there with Warren Pepper, my friend Warren Pepper. And Warren said, we just got the bulletin over the Associated Press, Bill, that Elvis had died. And I said, oh, my God, Warren. He said, yeah, it looks like it. Let's see where CBS, with Walter Cronkite at that point, where they put the story 20 minutes in.
No.
Oh, wow.
Elvis died, had just died. And they put the story 20 minutes in. So it's kind of, Gary, what it's you're just, talking about, not leading with Elvis's death. The biggest story, of course, of the year, of the decade.
In the 70s.
Yeah. When I heard that story, I said, Elvis who?
No, you didn't.
No.
You didn't do that.
We actually had a short documentary of Elvis Presley on that weekend.
I don't remember where I was when Elvis died.
Elvis was almost
as
big.
KTM, I think.
Yeah, maybe so.
Oh, yeah.
Elvis was almost as big in Charleston as Bobby Nash was. Almost.
Almost.
WTMA. There's more from our 70th birthday edition of The Morning Buzz coming up on the History of TMA. Now let's return to Bill Sharp and the mighty TMA Music Radio Gang in this way back edition of The Morning Buzz, originally broadcast on June 15th, 2009.
WTMA Tiger Radio. Do you remember?
Saturday, Sunday, TMA turns solid gold. It's a holiday blast. Then Monday, hear all the hits from 67.
It's going to be an interesting weekend, friends, not only on the radio, but where I am. I'll tell you that right now. 6 before 5, 11 o'clock. 6 before 11. That lemonade is getting to me. It's a good thing Sled don't raid this place, I tell you.
Get your answer in today on a postcard to Golden Backward Song, WTMA, Charleston. On the mighty TMA, here's another record that's out of this world.
WTMA, Tiger Radio.
Oh, folks, we are reminiscing as we hear those wonderful voices from the past. This is the 70th birthday today of WTMA. Happy birthday.
Almost live.
Almost.
And indirect.
What do you mean almost live? Of course we're live. That's the great Bobby Nash. I'm Bill Sharp from Live 5, and I'm sitting here in the WTMA studio in the air chair, if you would, of Richard Todd and Rocky D, and we've got some WTMA legends right here in front of me, and I can't be happier. I've got Gary London, the great Bobby Nash, Bill Quinn, who went on to become the Mighty Quinn in Philadelphia, the Right Reverend John Burwell on the phone, and the Weekend Warrior himself, Mr. Terry Allen. Before I reminisce some more, guys, with you, let me thank John Q.
Yes.
We call him Q here.
Yes.
John Quincy.
Yes. Oh, thanks, guys.
For doing a wonderful job with the website and with the special shows, John, where we look back and reminisce. You have done a fabulous job.
Oh, it's a labor of love, and I have a lot of fun.
And
John, I have a lot of fun doing it.
John wanted to be here.
He did.
He wanted to be a TMA.
I have a different definition of the labor of love.
What's that?
Let's not go there.
We won't go into that right now.
Because it's man's day.
This is a family show.
John Quincy is an honorary WTMA good guy. We have proclaimed that, and I think that's a unanimous thing.
Unanimous.
I think we ought to vote on that, Terry. That's Terry Allen talking there.
How about almost good guy?
Almost good guy.
I'm in here with Johnny. John wanted to keep an eye on me because he doesn't trust me out of his sight.
And I think that's a good thing that he's doing that, Terry. None of us can trust you. That's why we kicked you out of the studio a few minutes ago. Just teasing.
Thank you.
Now, I got to bring something up here, guys, before we go. We got about 4 or 5 minutes left. And Gary London, during the commercial, you were talking to me about how many people have found religion, actually become ministers after having worked here at WTMA. And I think that's because after working here, there is something, John.
RF.
You had to get religion. This place drove you to religion. If you didn't have it, you'd die. John Burwell, when did you, you're an Episcopal priest. When did you get the calling?
got the calling, golly, I think it was 78. I think it was 77, 78, something like that. Boob got it before I did because I was one of the few people who would actually listen to him. Boob would give me the four spiritual laws, and I think I was one of the few disc jockeys who would actually listen to him back then.
Yeah.
And he had a big influence on me, both before and after.
So you got the calling in part because of Boobie Nash. Boobie, did you get the calling to become a minister? You're a minister, too. Before or after the sex change? Do you remember? Was that? I'm sorry. I just teasing there, folks.
That is a cheap shot.
It is man's day, too.
It is man's day,
of all things. Well, you know, you keep calling Burwell right reverend.
Yes.
Does that mean that I'm the wrong reverend over here?
You could take that if you want to for what it means, Boo.
Well, I got the call, but you know, as a kid, and I think John Burwell probably had it too, you just sort of know that you want to know God. But
you were brought up that way.
Yeah, but in the traditional churches, they really did not, when I was growing up, teach us to really know him, just know about him. And there's a desire in every man to know God personally.
Quickly, we got a call for you, Booby, but before we get to that, Bill, do you want to share an experience you had after having worked at WTMA?
Yeah,
Bill Quinn is with us.
I went away, and I came back to visit my sister, and I went to church for one Sunday morning, and, you know, they never open up the baptismal for anyone.
Right.
But that particular day, the minister says, anyone, and I found myself coming up out of this being baptized personally.
Aww.
And you know, guys like me like my suit. I didn't even change clothes.
Yeah.
So while, you know, people talk about the calling or being called, it is clear to me that I had no desire that day to go get baptized. It happened to me. They have never opened the pool before or after that. So that was apparently my calling. And I'm really glad that I didn't shy away from it.
Yeah,
and it happened after having been here with people who really cared about people.
Something really exciting happened when I was baptized. When they brought me out of the water, my hair was floating down.
I was wearing toupees at the time.
And it floated down the water.
So your rug just left you and floated right down the water.
It was a sign.
It was a sign indeed. I'm not sure what it was a sign of. Alton's
back
on the
when that happened at Jet Ski Day, Boob. You know, you remember that one?
Yeah, the Jet Ski Day. We talked about that last week when I was on.
I heard you. I was there when that happened to you. I can testify to that fact.
Alton is on the phone, Boob. He wants to talk to you. Hi, Alton.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
Fine.
Boob, I remember you as a child growing up. Of course, WTMA was the only, I guess, rock and roll station that I remember. I was coming up in the 60s, and we had a 7-Eleven over here off Highway 61.
Mm-hmm.
And you remember when the Icy first came out, the Slurpees?
Yep. Uh-huh.
And they had
the
coupons on the side where you could tear them off, and you get X amount, and you can go in there and get free Slurpees.
Sure.
Well, you came to the 7-Eleven with the radio station, and do you remember making the Slurpee 45?
No.
Wow. I've got that. I still have that 45 at the house.
You've got a 45 that Booby made?
Yeah, it was a Slurpee. It was
that might be worth something.
It was put
it
out
might
by
be.
That company who made the Icy's. And you did a little song on that 45.
My goodness.
I sure would like to get it to you so you could see it.
We would love to hear that.
Yeah, drop it by the station. We'd like to hear
Alton,
that.
Alton, yeah, please do. Bring it by if you can. Alton, we're running out of time,
okay.
But thank you so much for the call and
sharing
that wonderful memory with us. Quickly, guys, we've got about, we don't have much time left at all.
Cool.
Let me thank everybody here. Bill Quinn, thank you so much. Booby Nash, Gary London.
Welcome.
Reverend John Burwell. John, thank you, my friend.
Hey, thank you so much for letting me be here.
Oh, our pleasure to have you. And my good friend and mentor, Terry Allen, the Weekend Warrior. Terry, thanks so much.
Thank you. Enjoy being here. I want to thank John Quincy, WTMAMemories.com, best website out there.
It's been great. Happy birthday, WTMA. It is 70 years old today. It's been great to reminisce with all of you. I'm Bill Sharp.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you, Bill.
Yeah, you did a great job.
Thank you, Bill.
Bill Sharp, Live 5 News. See you on TV.
Coming up next on the history of TMA, Rocky D commemorates our official 70th birthday with some news talk blast from the past.
WTMA Talk Radio 1250.
It was June 15th, 2009, exactly 70 years from WTMA's Charleston Airwaves debut. Let's flash back to hear what Radio Free Rocky D was up to on that day.
It is our 70th birthday today, which is good because they had the reunion show this morning. But most of those guys couldn't blow all the candles off on the cake. They're kind of old. So, I mean, it's over here in the corner melting away, and the fire alarm is going off, so you might hear some noise in the background. But what I want to talk about partly today, besides some things going on around the town, is the fact that for me and for a lot of people, I've always known WTMA as a talk station. I knew WTMA as a talker when I was living in Tampa in 89 because we were monitoring Hurricane Hugo down in actually, I was in Orlando at the time. We were monitoring because we were getting hail from that. We got like a huge hailstorm that just buried my friend of mine's Jeep CJ. Remember CJ's? Buried my friend's Jeep CJ in a parking lot, and it was on the news. It was on the network news because, you know, snow and hail in Florida. And I said, well, not really. Just ice fell from the sky, and it was still about 68 degrees outside. So I monitored what was going on. I started looking around, and all of a sudden, I'm looking around on the internet of the day, which was a lot slower than now, looking around, making phone calls, and they said, you need to talk to somebody named Dan Moon in Charleston. I said, Dan who? What kind of name is that? Oh, wait a minute. My name is Rocky. On the horn with us right now, on vacation with his feet in the water, umbrella drink in his hand, Dan Moon. Hey, Dan.
Hey, Rocky. How you doing, buddy?
Good, good, good. I mean, it's about the same now as it was 20 years ago, except now we have more frontal nudity, I think.
I think that's the only difference, and that's not for the good.
Now, you were the first actual live host when we flipped to talk. You were doing this as a country station 1988, before the thing hit?
Yeah, actually, it came there in 87. For the second time, and I was running a cable television system up in Somerville, and general manager of the system up there, and had a good job, didn't, but at any rate, they wanted me to come talk to them about doing a country music morning show. That's what we were playing at the time, and I did, and that lasted about a year and a half, and I got where I just could not stay part-time. I was going to come into the morning show and then go back up and do my duties as a manager of the cable TV system, but the place was in such terrible shape. The equipment was really bad shape. Just a mess. And so I got where I couldn't leave and go back to my regular job. I wound up staying later and later, and against my better judgment, I finally decided I'd jump back into it full steam, and we did. And then shortly thereafter, it was purchased by another owner, and I said he was going to turn it over to talk radio, and I said, I've never heard of talk radio. What do you do? He said, well, we just talk all the time. I said, you're crazy. He said, fool, and people listen? Yeah. I said, man, come on. You got to be. You don't play any music? No. I said, man.
All that kind of dovetailed on the popularity of talk radio as of 1987 when they deregulated all this so-called stupid fairness stuff, which was not really fairness at all. It was impossible.
When they got rid of that fairness doctrine, of course, it just really busted loose. Rush Limbaugh came along and with a national audience and started picking up stations here and there. And about a year and a half.
Yeah, you had Limbaugh. You had a couple people on the West Coast. You had Bob Grant in New York.
Bob Grant,
those people suddenly became important.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And, in fact, we carried Bob Grant on our station there, on TMA here for a while. But We did it, and everything was going along okay until September the 21st, and that's when Hugo came on. Of course, it was on the 1st of June of 1989 that we went actually talk.
Yeah, we went. Then, WTMA went from music to talk June 1st of 1989, but in September the big storm hit, and here was Dan Moon. Caught in the middle of it in a building that could fall down in an second.
Well, here's the crazy thing. We were switched to talk radio, as you said, on June the 1st. I was content to not do anything on the air. In other words, I was going to be the operations manager and run the place, but I didn't want to do a show on the air, had no intention of doing a show on the air whatsoever. Just run things from the desk, so to speak. But then Hugo came along and threw everything into a tizzy. Basically, the staff left me. They evacuated. They were gone. And so it was me and the engineer, whose name was Bruce Roberts, and I managed to get back. We got Bruce got us back on the air. We were off the air shortly the night of the hurricane, and then the afternoon at 5 o'clock, he got the transmitter dried out.
I mean, yeah, but and that old building in Orange Grove Road, when I came there in 2001, I thought, my God, and you guys broadcast from here? No way.
That was a dump. It was an absolute dump. But you know, it was a dump.
Well, it probably was a nice place in 1958.
Oh, yeah. I'm not so sure even then it was a nice place. This was one of those buildings, Rocky, that started off as a little small building, little concrete block building that housed a transmitter and a control room and a little newsroom area, and that was it. And then they started adding on piecemeal and one thing after another, and then it just became a conglomeration.
Oh, it looked like a house a crazy person built, like the Winchester home.
Oh, it was terrible. It was terrible. But, you know, out of that piece of junk, out of that old dilapidated building, which had skunks up in the attic and raccoons
under the floor.
Oh, my God, raccoons and skunks, and it was just a mess. when we bought a can of roach spray, we couldn't buy like a 12 or 15-ounce can of Reed. We had to buy it by the gallon and a jug. And spray that darn. But anyway, it wound up limited. It just proved one thing. It proved that the listening audience really doesn't care where you are coming from. In other words, you could be buck naked in your bathroom doing your show, and as long as they enjoy what they're hearing, and it doesn't matter. It makes no difference.
You don't have an internet cam in my house, do you?
No.
Because I wonder how you knew that. And then, by the way, for those who don't know it, Dan Moon was one of the guys instrumental in bringing me here, because they originally wanted to hire the management in their wisdom. Remember these guys that used to be here? The management that used to be here in their infinite non-wisdom, which is legendary in radio, wanted to bring this other guy in who was from North Carolina. And you know what happened to that guy, Dan? 8 months after I started here, that guy ended up in the drunk tank. I'm glad he's okay now, but something bad happened to him.
Yeah, I'll never forget that, Rocky. We the management at the time called me in there and said, "Dan, would you take this CD, or was it tape? I don't know whether you sent a CD or a tape. I think it was a tape. But anyway, would you listen to this audition tape from this guy and tell me what you think?" And I said, "Yeah." And so I took it and put it in. It must have been a CD.
Yeah,
I put it in
disc.
The car.
Yeah.
And I listened to it on the way home that day. And I, of course, it was you. And I'm listening to you, and I'm thinking, God almighty, this guy, he's never going to make it in Charleston. No way. I mean, this guy sounds like he's straight out of Chicago in the hood or something, you know? So I said, nah. But I listened going on the way home, and then I came back the next morning coming into work, and I pushed it again. I listened again. And then I listened to it again on the way going back home the next afternoon. And after about three times listening, I said, you know, this just might work. So I went back to the management at the time, and I said, all right. He said, what do you think, Dan? I said, I think we ought to give the guy a shot. But we're going to have to bring him all the way up here, and it might not work out. He might not. I said, well, I tell you what you do, and you remember this, Rocky.
Yeah.
I said, well, just give him a six-month contract. Give him a six-month contract to start with. And then if it doesn't work out, you know, we're not obligated for a year. And so that's what they did with you. And obviously, the rest is history.
Yeah, they gave me Steve. His name was. He gave me one. He gave me 1 year to beat the opposition in any demographic. And in 4 months, I beat them all in every demographic except one.
Yeah,
it wasn't that hard, Dan. I mean, Dan and I went out on the back porch of this old building, Donna, and we discussed evil plans on how to crush our competition. And I'm thinking to myself, all we got to do is be good because they suck.
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly right. But you know the philosophy, Rocky, back in those days, when we went talk radio, the philosophy by our owner, whose name was Bill Dudley at the time, but he's an engineer. He had an engineering background.
Mm-hmm.
And so his philosophy was great equipment, good engineering, and good execution. So we went out and bought all brand new equipment. I mean, everything, control boards, production boards, the cart decks that we use. I know I'm talking inside stuff to other people, but all the equipment that we use, folks, he bought all new equipment, and it was just marvelous, just great. Everything was new.
Yeah, if you go to Google and type in WTMA memories page, John Quincy put a good lot of pictures up there. You can see the old gates with the turn knobs that go About 3 months after you buy them?
Yeah, well, that's what we listen. When I first went to TMA as a country station, now that's what we had, that Gates board with the turn knobs.
Yeah.
And that served us for a while. And so when he, Dudley, bought all brand new equipment, it was all the digital stuff with the slide knobs and all that. And I said, my Lord, I can't. I've died and gone to heaven.
And now we have touch screens, man. Yeah. I mean, here I am. I'm still here.
More from WTMA's 70th birthday broadcast with Rocky D coming up next.
The history of TMA.
Now, let's return to the June 15th, 2009 edition of Radio Free Rocky D as the history of TMA continues.
It's getting increasingly more and more difficult to have fun because you have legal eagles running around going, oh my God, you can't say booger, we'll all get sued. Speaking of boogers, hey, Dan Moon is on the line.
You know, we used to have a lot of fun, Rocky, when we started this thing because there were no rules. No rules whatsoever. We didn't know what to do. Talk radio was relatively new, I mean, for the most part, in these size markets like Charleston. Now, it was already prevalent in New York and Chicago and some big markets, but not in markets the size of Charleston.
By the way, Dan, a big surprise here. On the horn with us right now, one of Dan Moon's first news babes, Dorothy Conflenti. Hey, Dorothy.
Hey, Rocky. How are you?
Hey, Dan. Meet Dorothy again.
My Lord,
Dan, I can't believe it's been 20 years.
Dorothy, I cannot either. I haven't heard your voice. I guess neither one of us have heard each other, and at least I haven't heard your voice since.
Hey, Dorothy, by now, is that secret love child grown up and 20 years old through college yet, or what?
Yeah, he still owes me back pay and child support, I'll tell you what.
Start a rumor, Dan, start a rumor. By the way, and now here I am. You know, I didn't know to tell you this, Dorothy, but Dan was like the main man. He was the most instrumental piece of me getting hired up here. Dan said, yeah, take this guy. Bring him up here. He's nuts.
Well, it sounds like he made a great choice. And Dan, of course, was with us from the very beginning. He and I did the morning news together, our four-hour news block, and it was just about one of the funnest jobs I think I ever had. It was great.
I just saw your picture. You're a hottie.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
I bet you're still a hottie.
Well, I tried.
And here's something you don't say too much in radio, Dan. Hey, that woman's a hottie.
A face for radio is what they say.
Back in those days, did we, Dorothy? We didn't say hottie on the air or anything.
No.
You didn't say hottie. Oh, by the way, and then, of course, you know, me talking about how Dan brought me up here. See, yeah. Donna? See, Donna? See, Dorothy? See, Dan? You knew I'd find a way to turn this whole WTMA birthday into all about me.
So, yeah, Rocky, I knew you would.
Now, Rocky, what market did you come from?
I came out of Tampa.
Oh, wow, my backyard.
So I'm well aware of Sarasota, so I knew when I called you, you'd be doing nothing because it's land of the walking dead down there.
Yes, unfortunately, it truly is.
Do you remember where the old VIP ice rink used to be?
No.
Yeah, I used to skate there. I used to skate there and referee ice hockey down there.
Oh, yeah, yep. I do know where that is, actually. Yeah, they built a big mall around it.
Of course they did. Hey, Dan, what do you remember when Dorothy first came on here? Were you new, Dorothy?
I actually, relatively, I'd been in radio about 5 years. I was in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina at WKZQ.
Wow.
And then came over to WTMA. Hugh Jett, actually. I don't know if anyone remembers. I know Dan remembers Hugh, but Hugh Jett brought me over, so.
Hugh was our, just for information, Hugh Jett was our general manager, and he also was a part owner of the station. Hugh had spent several years in broadcasting, many years, but he had been in the mainly the sales end of it.
Mm-hmm.
So Hugh was actually the general manager when we flipped it to talk radio. But Dudley decided he wanted Hugh to run the sales end of things and be the big boss, and then ask me if I would be the operations manager and run the everything on the air side, which was okay. But, Dorothy, I don't know whether I even told you this at one time. When they asked me to, when Dudley asked me to take over and run the thing, I said, you got to be a nut. You're crazy. You're an idiot. I said, I don't even believe in this talk radio. This is not going to work. And he kept me on anyhow. And I said, my Lord, this guy's got to be crazy. But he was a crazy guy who knew what he was doing. And I said, mm-hmm. You know, I trust him. I think he's not going to put all his money into something. It's not going to work. And so with that in mind, you know, we played it out for a while. And, of course, when Hugo came along in, December of 89, everything completely changed. I mean, we were doing well, and TMA Rocky would have been successful anyhow. It just would have taken us a little longer.
Yeah. Talk radio is king now, man. Talk radio is king. It is the new top 40.
It is.
Now, listen.
And now you guys, I'm here. See, it's about me again.
Well, Garvey remembers. Now, Garvey was involved in the news end of it, and so and not so much in the talk end. Of course, after, I didn't even, by the way, Dorothy, you remember this, didn't start a talk show at first. You know, it was a whole 4 hours of news.
Yes.
You know, it went to 6 till 10 in the morning of news, and then we went to a network talk show. I think it was Joy Brown, I believe.
Right.
A psychologist. Yep. And then, of course, Limbaugh at noon and all this. But we, actually, Rocky, I had no intention of getting on the air, really, and doing a talk show. Of course, when Hugo came along, we were all called in to do extra duty, and we needed a talk show, and I filled in there and did it.
You know, that's when I learned who you were, Dan, because we were in, at the time I was in Orlando, and we were getting pounded with ice. And I'm thinking, ice in Orlando?
Yeah.
And we were getting pounded with ice, and it really was still warm outside, 68, 70 degrees. Here come ice flying. Look on the news, and there it is, Hugo. It has hit Charleston. WTMA is 70 years old today, and I want to concentrate a little bit more on when it turned into talk radio. And I've got Dan Moon on the line right now, and one of his original news babes, Dorothy Conflenti. Hey, Dorothy.
Hey, Rocky. How you doing?
We're trying to talk you into coming up here this Saturday. I know it's kind of short notice, but...
A little short notice, but I'll definitely plan a trip up there one weekend for sure.
There you go. We got room for you.
That's great.
Hey, Dan?
Yeah, I'm here.
That first night, now were you and Dorothy both in the studio when Hugo was hit, or were you all alone in there? What happened?
Dorothy, I think several of you guys, evacuated. Were you one of those?
Yeah, we drove up to, what did we drive up to? I think it was Columbia.
Greenville, or?
Yeah, it's Columbia. We drove up to Columbia. They shut down the interstate back then, and it was bumper-to-bumper traffic. I think what was normally a two-hour drive took us 8 hours.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable.
I've got a photo back then. What the governor back then did was installed parking meters along the side of the freeway and made money off it.
Let me tell you a serious note here, and this is the truth. It sounds kind of rough, but let me tell you. People were stranded on that interstate.
Yep.
They couldn't get up there, and this was for Hugo now we're talking.
Right.
And this lesson had never hit us like this hard. I mean, not with the population we had. I mean, it had grown so much, and we had never had to go through a massive evacuation as we did for Hugo. Like, so people stranded forever, and people were having to use the facilities, so to speak, and they were nowhere close to a rest area. So, I mean, you know, you're talking about pine trees growing fast. My goodness.
Hey, Dorothy, were you listening to Dan when you were taking off out of town going, bye, Dan, nice knowing you.
Yeah, I'll see you later. So, yeah, no, it was great. He stayed behind, one of the few people that did stay behind and held down the fort and was kind enough to say, go, you know, you guys go ahead. And then we came back a day or two later, I can't really recall, and I think WTMA was just about the only station on the air. And so we were working around the clock just trying to get information out to people. It was quite an experience.
Dan, did you think that when you were doing this, you know, in the back, I know you were doing it because you had to do it, but in the back of your mind, you're thinking, this is really going to put WTMA on the map, and this is going to show everybody how important talk radio is.
That's when I sensed it. Like I said, I didn't think it would work. And up until shortly after Hugo, a few days after Hugo hit, is when it started to sink in that now I think I see what this talk radio business is, really, honest to God. After running it for those 3 or 4 months, I said, nah, I didn't, and not knowing really what it was all about. But I saw that we were in the medium of communication. And radio had kind of gotten away from the communication business. In other words, well, I say communication. They had gotten away from two-way communication. They were strictly one-way. And so many of them had even gone automated and had cut back their jocks or disc jockeys who could only say a few words and had a script. And those words are normally scripted.
Yeah.
So we had taken
Sounds familiar,
the fun,
Dan.
We'd taken the fun, the personality, and the two-way communications out of broadcasting. And we, at least in Charleston, WTMA put it back in there. Where people could talk to us, we could talk to them. And, you know, Dorothy, you remember this. We got a lot of problems solved. I mean, for those 3 weeks that we took the network away and did continuous local talk stuff, I can't tell you how many problems we solved. People needed to be able to talk about their problems and discuss what was going on. So that told me, you know, this may just work. And sure enough, after Hugo was gone 3 weeks later, we went back to our general network program, trying to get back to some normalcy. But the listeners said, Dan, could you get back on the air again? And I really didn't want to do it, but I finally said, okay. So, Dorothy, I think, as well as I can recall, I took about a half hour 2 days a week in the mornings there with your show, mm-hmm. show that you all were doing with the news. I think a half hour of that on, like, Tuesdays and Thursdays, we did open up the phone lines, and then we extended it to an hour, I think.
Yep.
Still only a couple of days a week. It was a good while before we actually went 5 days a week, and that was because I really didn't want to be honest with you.
Yeah, because I remember the show became very popular very fast. So he got put in a position to do it, I think, whether he wanted to or not.
It's all you, Dorothy. It was all you. And then, of course, Rocky D came in 2001. What happened? It's all about me again.
Hey, Rocky. Hey, I got a bite on my line here.
Oh, okay, man. You going to hang up, Dan?
I'm sitting in a chair.
Uh-huh.
On the beach with my feet down in the surf and a surf rod beside me and something biting it.
Go pull it in. We'll talk to you another time. Go ahead.
Yeah, I got to go do it.
Okay, go ahead, Dan. See you.
I'll see you, my friend.
All right, there you go. Hope he doesn't want to hear
anything. Hey, Dorothy.
Yes,
Dorothy.
Bye, Dan.
I'll see you later.
Nice catching up with you.
Hang on, Dorothy. Hang on. Let me get rid of
Dan
here.
I'm going to have to remember that one.
And, okay,
I got
now,
a bite on the line.
I got a bite on the line.
I got to go.
Yeah, that's what I always do. I always tell telemarketers, I'm sorry, my dog's on fire. Can you hang on? Hey, Dorothy, you still there?
Yes.
Now that Dan's going, can you tell us some dirt about him? Come on, tell us the stuff.
I wish I had some dirt, but I don't. Great guy.
All right, see if you can make it up there this weekend. Now, you were... this was the big boon when things happened. Now, talk radio exploded in 1987, and everybody says it's because of the fairness doctrine, but I'm going to tell you what it really came down to, okay? It mm-hmm. came down to the fact that when stations began to absorb each other.
Yes.
All right?
Yes.
Suddenly, little standalones like WTMA became even more important, and this is happening again today. People mm-hmm. are saying, I don't want to hear the same crap I hear everywhere else. Same talk show guy saying the same thing every day at the same time, and then there's Rocky D, who will talk about what's out my window.
And, exactly.
And when it came to Hugo, that was everything involved with Hugo was more important than things happening in Washington, D.C. or La La Land at that time.
It truly was. I remember being on the air and people calling in asking, where can I get water? Where can I get food? Asking, where can I get diapers for my baby? I mean, some of the basic necessities of life, it was... it was an unbelievable experience. And then, of course, at the time, it was Governor Carroll Campbell. And he would call into the station a couple of times a day. He'd give us an update. It's really nice to have that kind of connection with the community. And I think today that's what a lot of radio stations are missing, is that community connection. But we definitely had it, and I think you guys still have it.
Yeah, watch me right now. Everybody watch me. I know you can watch me on the radio. Watch me. I will now do what network talk show hosts cannot do. Donna, explain what I'm doing.
Looking out your window.
I'm looking out the window at Charleston.
Oh, I thought you meant the other thing you usually do that keeps you off of TV. But
that's why they don't turn the internet cams on when I'm in here, because they're afraid I might do this. All right. Well, come on up sometime and spend a little time up here. Yeah, after going through all that. Yeah, come on up, Dorothy.
I will, and I'll let you know when I'm coming. I'll stop by the station. Love to see you guys.
All right, thanks, Dorothy.
Okay, bye. Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Dorothy Gifflenty.
What a great lady.
Coming up on the history of TMA, there's more from Rocky D and more voices from WTMA's past. You can learn more about our station's legacy at WTMAmemories.com. That's WTMAmemories.com. And we hope you'll continue to make our station part of your life, as hundreds of thousands of Lowcountry listeners have done over the last 7 decades. Thank you for listening to WTMA.